You're listening to a Peak Media production.
And now, coming to you from the Windy City, it's the Daily Dime with your host, Tim Keller.
Hey everyone, and welcome in. Today is Tuesday, April 9th, and we've got a full show for you today after a busy Monday in sports. And we'll preview a little bit of the action to come here on Tuesday as well. So let's jump right into it. The first game that I wanted to talk about was actually back to Sunday, talking about the women's national championship between Iowa and USC. The ratings actually came in yesterday, showing that they had a rating of 18.7 for that game, which was the most in a basketball game, men's or women's, since the 2019 men's final between Virginia and Texas Tech. So they averaged 18.5 million viewers, which is just incredible. Shows how far the women's game has come in the past couple years, especially with the prevalence of Caitlin Clark. This game also peaked at 24 million viewers, which is essentially like the population of Australia. So great to see those numbers coming back, and looking forward to see how they can build on that in the years to come. But also, speaking of some larger numbers, some of the contract details are starting to come out from Calipari's new contract with Arkansas. It looks like he's actually going to take a slight pay cut from the $8.5 million he was making with Kentucky. But I think I see the strategy here. It seems a little bit weird on the surface. You know, he's going from a top-tier blue blood program with Kentucky to what is currently, you know, kind of a middle of the pack SEC school with Arkansas, who was under 500 last year. But I think from his perspective, you know, you have all that pressure on you at Kentucky. The boosters are going to be on you. There's a high pressure to win and win at the highest level, always competing for a championship. And it's tough with the philosophy that he's had over the past, you know, decade or so, bringing in all these blue chip prospects that are one and done guys. It's hard to develop a team and build your program. And I'm wondering if we're going to see a philosophy change as he goes to Arkansas and trying to bring in maybe some of these guys that aren't these top tier blue chip prospects that he can keep around for a couple years, develop them a little bit longer, probably grab some guys out of the transfer portal, and really try to build the program and develop these guys and compete for championships that way. So that's just my assumption. I don't know if it's his actual goal. Maybe he'll try and take all the prospects with him to Arkansas and do the exact same thing. But I'm really curious to see how that's going to play out over the next few years. And we'll see if he can get that Arkansas squad to, you know, the top of the game in college basketball and reach the mountaintop there. But speaking of that mountaintop, we also had the men's national championship last night between UConn and Purdue, and UConn ends up winning this one 75-60. And the score, I don't think, was totally indicative of how close this game actually was. You know, this was a great game from the get-go. I thought there was a ton of action. It was back and forth. Both teams were throwing punches, and UConn was able to pull away a little bit at the end of the first half, going up 36-30 into halftime. But then that was where everything changed. The next 10 minutes of the second half, Purdue only scored 8 points. UConn grew that lead to 13, and there was really no looking back from there. And they're just so dominant and so deep. They've been great in the second half all year, and they ended up with the best point differential in tournament history at plus 140. So I think this is one of the better champions that we've seen of late, just completely dominant all tournament. Zach Edey even went for 37-10, and it didn't matter. This was UConn's tournament to lose, and they came in and they closed the deal. So congrats to UConn. They are the first back-to-back champs since Florida in 06 and 07. And I guess now they'll look to become the first back-to-back-to-back champs since UCLA won, I believe it was 7 titles in a row in the late 60s, early 70s. And I don't think any other team has even won 3 besides that UCLA squad in a row. So we'll see if they can pull that off, which would be an incredible feat in modern college basketball. And I think it just proves that they are truly one of the new blue bloods, along with you know, the typical Kentucky, Kansas, Duke, Carolina, UCLA squads. So again, congrats to UConn and also the USC Gamecocks on the women's side as we put a bow on the college basketball season. So with that being said, I want to transition over to the MLB. We had a couple of great games yesterday. The first one I want to talk about was the Guardians beating the White Sox 4-0 in Cleveland. That pitching staff has only allowed 21 runs all season, which is an MLB best, as opposed to the 72 runs that the Marlins have allowed on the opposite end of the spectrum. And speaking of the Marlins, they lost again yesterday to fall to 1-10 to the Yankees as they lose 7-0 in the Bronx. Another really fun game that we had yesterday was also the Reds and the Brewers in Cincinnati. The Reds jumped out to an early lead, partially due to an absolute bomb from Ellie De La Cruz. He had a 450-foot moonshot to center, just about hitting the smokestacks out there in Great American Ballpark. And if you haven't seen Ellie De La Cruz play yet, I strongly urge you to find a way to watch one of his games. He is one of the most electrifying young players in the game today, and he is just so, so much fun to watch. Not only does he have that power, as I alluded to with a 450-foot home run early in the game, but he's also one of the quickest players in the league as well. He had a clip that went viral last year where he stole second, stole third, and then also stole home. Probably my favorite clip of the entire season last year. Just one of the, like I said, one of the most electrifying players in the game. And speaking to his versatility, so he hits that home run, gives the Reds an early lead. They end up jumping out to a 9-3 lead on the Brewers, but the Brewers come back. They cut the lead to 9-8. Ellie comes up 2 innings later in the seventh, and he hits a ball to center, just short of the center fielder as he dives, misses the ball, rolls far back to the close to the center field wall, and Ellie ends up with an inside the park home run to extend the lead to 10-8, and that ended up being the final score. But on that inside the park home run, he cleared the bases in 14 and a half seconds. Like 360 feet in that amount of time is just incomprehensible. You have to turn three times. He's incredible to watch. So he ended up with a 450-foot home run and a 282-foot home run in the same game. Just so much fun to watch. And so is the rest of this Reds team. They've got a young squad, and excited to see what they can do on the year. They're only 6-4 so far, but I think they're going to be contenders there in the NL Central and may even make a playoff push if they get to that point. But then elsewhere around the league, the Nationals beat the Giants 8-1 in Blake Snell's Giants debut. He struggled, giving up 3 runs in just 3 innings. And then also the Dodgers beat the Twins 4-2 with Ohtani going 3-for-5 with a home run. This is despite all of the distractions with the gambling scandal and everything, but he's still hitting 345 on the season. He's got 3 home runs, 8 RBIs in just 13 games. And that Dodgers lineup is just absolutely loaded as well. Even with him hitting 345 so far, he only has the 4th best average on the team. They've got Betts, Freeman, and Smith all hitting at least 348 at the top of the lineup there. So they're going to be a tough out all season long. And as we look ahead to tonight, we have a couple of huge games in the association. The first one is the Warriors taking on the Lakers, as both of those teams are trying to improve their seeding currently in the Western Conference play-in tournament. We also have the Clippers facing off with the Suns, as both of those teams are trying to avoid the play-in tournament. And then we also have the top two teams in the East playing as the Celtics head to Milwaukee to take on the Bucks. The Celtics are already set as the 1 seed in the East, but the Bucks are in a tight race trying to hold on to that 2 seed. So it should be a good game there as well. And with that, we will wrap up our Tuesday episode. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Please consider subscribing. And if you could, give us 5 stars wherever you listen to your podcast. Thank you all. Have a great day.